3, 2, 1.
Boom! And we are on. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of The Renegade Show. And today I have the honor and pleasure to introduce one of the renegades that I have been observing from afar from a long time. She comes from my home region in Southeast Asia. Her name is Juliana Sen. And she is one of the most influential leaders in business and technology in Asia. And so today, I am glad that we have Juliana on the pod. Welcome to the pod, Juliana.
Thank you so much, Kelvin. I'm very glad that I can participate in this pod.
Thank you. And yeah. So for our listeners who are listening for the first time to The Renegade Show, this show is really about people who go against the grain, people who are innovators who didn't take the path that was really open to everybody. So you have a very unique story, Juliana, and I would really love if you could share with our listeners a little bit of your background, where you came from, your alumni, and how you found yourself in technology and business.
Okay, sure. So I think I will start a bit about my childhood first. So I was born in the small town in Indonesia called Pematang Siantar. I'm not sure if the audience know this place. It's a small town with only 250,000 people. And my mother is a single parent, so I have one sister. And when we were small, I would say our life is not that easy. I remember when everybody want to ride the bicycle and we don't have money to buy that at that time. And I think, but that's make us how very self-motivated, I and my sister. So my mother never push us has to be right rank number one or number two, number three in the school. But somehow we always make it like in the top 10. And then when we are going to the university, I think that's my turning point. I remember in the high school, I kept remind myself whether I would like to spend my life like my mother in working in a small shop in a small town. So I remember at that time around 1998 and Amazon is booming with the online retail. And I'm thinking like, I want to do something like e-commerce at that time, right? And I have that dream, but my mother do not have enough funding to support me to have a good university. So then I only have chance to do the test in a capital city called Medan for the IT university. I would say it's not like really IT university, it's more like IT school. Then, but I have an opportunity to travel to Jakarta for my first time. I have cousins which are studying in the Nusantara University, the best IT university, I would say. That.
BINUS is actually the MIT of Indonesia. I think all the top technology alumni come from there, right? And you managed to get in.
Yeah. So I think actually I managed to try the test without telling anyone. So I went to this university and I tried the last test for the university, and I told myself if I could be the top three, and because at that time if we are in the top three or in the certain score, we don't need to pay the fee. So we only pay partially, not all full. And I think that would be great, right? So, but actually I don't have any preparation. I only have very big motivation. I want to in, and surprisingly I make it. And I kind of in the top high score, so I don't need to pay the, I would say, like the first fee or something. It's quite big amount at the time.
Yeah.
So, and then I go back. I remember we have a very tough discussion because we are from a big family. My mother is single parent. I remember all my uncles disagree. I went to Jakarta and leave my mother in a small town with my sister. But then my aunts, which is they are very agreed that, oh, yeah, we are as women, we need to also change. We don't necessarily have to become a housewife and stay in a small town, right? Then I'm very appreciate that my mother is very open mind. I know it's very hard at that time for her to let me go, but she support whatever decision I made, and I make decision that I want to change my life. I don't want just to spend my life in a small town, running a small shop, right, or become a housewife.
And that must have been really difficult, because I've been to Indonesia, and if you see the role of women, even though you had a woman president, Megawati Sukarnoputri, right, predominantly a lot of the women in Indonesia was really playing the role of a housewife. So therefore, what you did was really against the norm, I would believe, coming from a single mother and doing that. How did it feel for you? Did you get any support and motivation from the men around you, your uncles, your relatives, or were you primarily just driven from the support of your sister and your mother?
Yeah, I would say at the time, most of the men family, men like my uncles, they didn't agree, right? Mm-hmm. They think maybe I just have a university or the IT school, do not go so far. I'm a woman, I have my mother and a sister. But I'm very glad that my mother is very open-minded. My sister support me a lot. My friends support me. My aunt support me. I remember we have that discussion at night between my uncle and my aunts, and they have an agreement whether I go or I not go. But then I finally make it like, okay, I will go. And I make actually at that time make a commitment. I'm not like a very top 3 rank students actually in the school, not right. A lot of students, they always like number 1, number 2, but I'm not. But I make a commitment to myself. I need to make sure my GPA is 4.0, mm-hmm. so that I will continue to get the scholarship from the university. And at that time, I will make my mother proud and not very difficult to support me. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I make it through. I think I got the scholarship for 7 times. I think until I cannot get it anymore, right? Because of the timing. Then, mm-hmm. yeah, and that's when I start to work before I graduate. And I actually, at that time, I would say it's very interesting when I study in university. I have no background of computer. Mm-hmm. I only know Word, right? I practice Word at school, mm-hmm. but I don't know, like, at that time, like C, C++. I remember when I have a first examination, I really don't understand. I think it's like a robot language.
Yeah.
I don't understand at all. Mm-hmm. And I got D, almost failed.
Interesting.
I almost failed for my mid-test, yeah.
And it's interesting from having that very little comprehension. If you look at the biography you have, you were the country general manager or country lead for ASUS, which is really a big hardware computer server company in the world. And it was really interesting because you rose up in your career to become a general manager or a country lead in ASUS, but then you made a switch. You did a 180 and you moved from hardware to software, now leading Microsoft in that region. So I'd like to understand from you, what was the triangulation or the calculation that you made to actually shift your technology background from running a hardware company, which is really in and of itself a very competitive and tough business, to software? What was the thinking behind it, and how did you make that transition?
Okay, yeah, that's my second turning point in my life, I would say. Mm-hmm. And I remember at that year, I have the confusion in my life, like whether I would continue. I know I have a very good opportunity in ASUS. I've been very close with the management as well, and close with the team, and we are in the peak of the performance. We hit the 50% of market share for the mm-hmm. consumer notebook. But then I have a like doubt, right, whether this is what I want. Because I think at the end, I have that calculation. I have that comparison. Mm-hmm. Whether I'm in ASUS, I got all those praise, those benefits, right? At that time, we engaged with a lot of celebrities for our smartphone business. I was in the Metro TV program for the Techno Lounge. And then, yeah, and it's very stable, very comfort, right? But then mm-hmm. I feel like I need to jump out for this from this comfort. Mm-hmm. I need to make myself more competitive again. I need to learn. Mm-hmm. I think at that time, I think the key is, I feel like I want to learn something. So at that time, before I left, actually, I already start to keep thinking about this. I talked to my boss at that time, our APEC GM for mm-hmm. ASUS at that time. Mm-hmm. And then he allowed me to have, like, I can go back from the office at 4 and I can study whatever I want. Mm. And then at that time, I was thinking, like, it has been almost 12 years. I'm in ASUS. I will study the IT, like information system. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering, like, how is the IT right now, right? I mean, like, really the solution in the software. So at that time, I get a programming class at night from 6 to 9. Mm-hmm. And I start to realize, like, wow, so much changed since I graduated from university, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like there is a lot of things I still don't know about it, but I feel like software will be the technology will be everywhere in the future. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I want to be part of it. I mm-hmm. want to learn it. And in the same time, I got the offering from Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And then I'm actually the role is a CMO lead. Mm-hmm. Leading the marketing. Mm-hmm. I would say that, yeah, of course, at that time, it's also like I asked here and there, thinking about that. But what made me really move is I also read a book from Carol Dweck about the growth mindset before I joined Microsoft. Mm-hmm. So I bought that book and I read. I remember there is a story about the girl and how that girl that all people say she cannot play judo, if I'm not mistaken, but then she made it. She mm-hmm. made it, and then even people say you are not suitable to go to Yale, but she made it as well. So mm-hmm. I think the key is how we come out from our comfort zone, mm-hmm. and we continue to learn, and yeah. that's really moved me, right? So if you ask me, of course I'm scared. I mean, like, I'm very familiar with the hardware. I mean, I know very well already with yeah. all those notebooks, supply chains, right? I know very well all the channels, all the market, everything.
Right.
And then I need to jump. And I need to start from zero. Yeah. I got nothing about the software and the commercial business. Yeah, but then I made it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I'm not sure you had made the calculation to jump from hardware to software, but the reality is the gross margins, the unit economics of software business is much more lucrative compared to the hardware business. And at the end of the day, the hardware business is really a business to the race up to the bottom, right? Because at the end of the day, yeah. it's going to be impacted by fixed costs. It's going to be impacted by labor shortages, supply chain. But at the end of the day, software is digital, right? And you could effectively leapfrog. So did those things came into your thinking? Were you thinking of the job of the future? Or were you thinking about just trying to change your paradigm and move out of your comfort zone? What was the was that in your calculation when you were thinking of where technology was going?
Yes, actually, indeed, I have that calculation. Mm-hmm. I even write an article about 1% more. Because mm-hmm. to be honest, yes, it's true in the hardware business. It's hard, I mean, mm-hmm. to even to get 1% more. Mm-hmm. margin, right? Yes. So I have that calculation also, and I see that's why I think software will be the futures, because it's digital, right? A lot of development, a lot of new things, right? So I have that calculation.
Yeah, and it's interesting because when I talk to a lot of people, especially in Asia, because the way the technology is moving, Asia had kind of leapfrogged North America because they went from not having a lot of computers and straight into mobile, effectively for most of the region. And Indonesia, being the youngest nation and the most populous nation, is probably one of the highest mobile users. So making that jump from hardware to software, and then now you're looking at wetware or brain power, which is really artificial intelligence. And Microsoft is now in the forefront of not only the software industry, but the AI industry. So is your horizon also looking towards the future and kind of driving to AI and machine learning and wetware? Is that something that's inside your calculation as you drive your career in this area?
Yes, I would say if I can tell you, mm-hmm. secret, my secret. Actually, not even far from that. I already think about the quantum as the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're keeping yourself abreast. And it's interesting because for a lot of Indonesians, right, if you look at GDP per capita, they are not living in, if you were to compare the Indonesian living standard to, say, the Singaporeans or even Hong Kong or China, the GDP is still, you know, lagging behind a lot of these developing countries simply because of the way the wealth is spread and things are organized. So as a woman, as an executive, as a leader, what is your vision for Indonesia? How can an Indonesian girl listening to this podcast many years from now, because this thing will live on forever, what can she do? Given the earning and the money that's required to break into technology, what can they do?
I think nowadays there's a lot of, I think first things first, nowadays a lot of online course available, right? Mm-hmm. Even is free one, like Microsoft also provide. And I think as a girl, we should also take some time. Mm-hmm. I think I'll just allocate 30 minutes, let's say every day, just to mm-hmm. learn something new on the online, right? Mm-hmm. Online course or podcast or listen or read articles related to this change, technology, business. I think that would be good, right? If mm-hmm. we continue to fill in our knowledge about that and also to continue to sharpen our skill towards that, yeah.
And in terms of education and support groups, what would you like to see to be done in Southeast Asia, especially for females going into technology and really having a career there? Is the infrastructure starting to change, or is there a lot more to be done to kind of support and really advocate for females to get into this business from your perspective?
Yeah. From my perspective, I think we need to have kind of the support group for the women. Mm-hmm. I see the challenge actually for female mm-hmm. to go up. Always there is a ceiling right above mm-hmm. us. Yeah. So I think we need to have more like a support group. It can be official or non-official one or community based, right? To coach more female mm-hmm. to go to the executive level or even in the technology business. Yeah.
And how do you see the role of language helping in driving more people to information technology? Because I think for a lot of our listeners who are listening in North America and Europe and even in Australia, English is a predominant language. But in Indonesia, it's Bahasa. And so what is the role of language in helping people kind of drive into technology? Because not a lot of the programming languages or even the education courses are in Bahasa. So is there things being done in Southeast Asia, especially in Indonesia, to kind of help with the language gap? Because it's really a tough thing for somebody to switch from learning Bahasa and then having to learn everything in English. What are you seeing being done in your region?
Okay, what I see is if we want to have a business, for example, in Indonesia, even when I was in Asus or even in Microsoft, I think a lot of content has to be in Bahasa. Mm-hmm. So like you mentioned, I mean, English is not our mother tongue, so mm-hmm. not very easy for everyone to understand very clear. Mm-hmm. And what I see the gap, one is a good thing is a lot of courses, like specifically in technology, and they already start to have Bahasa because they mm-hmm. are from local startup. Mm-hmm. But then a lot of the online courses actually coming from not from Indonesia, they are still in English. So I think that would be the gap, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because technology itself already difficult to understand. Mm-hmm. And when they speak in English, not all the Indonesian very familiar with that. So mm-hmm. I saw that is a gap of that. I'm also thinking like we should have maybe from government or yeah. some party to do the massive kind of the translation or localization. Mm-hmm. So then the adoption will be quicker and higher. for Indonesia.
So as a leader for one of the largest conglomerates in the world, Microsoft, right, a big multinational, how are you using the position, the power, the influence that you have to drive change in your region, whether it's advocating for women's groups or advocating for education to be more accessible for information technology in the local language?
Yeah, so I would say we do a lot of localization right now for Indonesia in Microsoft. So we understand that in order to reach everyone, to make them understand about the features of the great technology, so that's where we do a lot of localizations. And then also in the same time in Microsoft, we also have the we call like a community that very support on the women. And we have a kind of a lot of activities to support women, either in the coding, in the technology, in a lot of activities, and even for the mentorship for the women, right? And yeah, I hope that, I remember I also ever meet a startup, one of the startup in Indonesia, which is co-founded by a group of young girls. I'm very happy to see this group of the young ladies. And I think their mission actually is really to empower the girls in Indonesia. So they provide free mentorship, right? They also offer me to have a free mentorship to them. They provide free training, provide a lot of stuff, free tech, like a coding class, a lot of activities that to support the girls. I hope that this kind of the community or this kind of the organization have many more in Indonesia, so we can like more empower women for Indonesia.
And how many young ladies or young women are you mentoring yourself personally in your own time?
Okay, I would say that not much, right? I only have one person right now, but I do like to write articles or sharing some videos, right, about how we can, like, I ever make a video about Leslie, right? And I think so far is that I don't do so much mentorship right now. So I only have one.
So you're driving through content. So your mentorship is really driving through articles and content and awareness. That's how you are mentoring. You're using media to kind of mentor people. Is that the technique you're currently using given the constraints in your time?
Yes, right. Yeah.
Okay. So as we end the podcast, what is your wish that you would like to leave to all our fellow renegades, male and female, whether they're in Indonesia, Southeast Asia, or the world? What is your hope and your wish for everyone listening that they can take from the life story that you have and what they can kind of look forward to as we end this podcast?
Yeah, I always believe dreams differ to the destiny. So I'm don't afraid to jump from our comfort zone, see what will be the opportunity in the future and take the move.
Yeah. And with that, terima kasih, Juliana. Okay.
Thank you all.
Bye-bye.